Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wheel of Life podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Last Thursday, which was the 21st of October, I had a bit of an issue with purchasing goblet tickets. And as our first episode has just gone out about exits, I felt that we might have felt it'd be a good idea to do a mini one, actually about being able, another one about exits, but about being able to purchase tickets as a disabled person. So, who have we got today, Rich?
Today we have Faye Johnson and Jess Allen-Chowdhury.
Hello.
And, and we also have Nick as well.
And we have the wife.
Thank you, John. I was wondering who was going to mention me.
We also have my wife, the lovely Nicola.
Where do we start, Rich?
I think we should start with you and your experience, because this is what spurred you on to bring in this podcast. So would you like to explain to us where you came from when you wanted to book the Coldplay tickets?
Me, in my naivety, because recently I also booked a tune ticket on Ticketmaster. Now, I've been to see a tune a few times, and but when booking these shows, it's incredibly easy. There is an option to book tickets through Ticketmaster. In case anybody doesn't know, I need a company, a carry ticket. So with the cheering tickets, I just go on the Facebook, the free company ticket comes up, and Bob's your uncle. Unbeknownst to me, it's not to do with Ticketmaster, it's to do with the actual promoter. So I spent afterwards trying to look on Ticketmaster. I spent the whole day trying to get tickets. I got good of 3 times. after waiting probably 2 hours each time. On the fourth try I get through. £120 later,
wow,
I book my Coldplay tickets. Then I find out from my friend that's going with me, as well as my carer. But then I find out from my friend who's going with me that she can actually get seated tickets, not for disabled people, for £50 each.
Wow.
So your ticket was more expensive?
Yes.
Is that to do with where the seat was located, do you think?
I believe so, but yes, I wasn't given an option.
No, that's what I was going to say. The issue is that you're not given a choice but to sit there. That's the only place you can sit there. And usually that is taken into consideration. Normally, your seat would be at the cheapest rate because it's a concession, because you don't have the option to sit there.
I nearly died of shock, Jess. I nearly died of shock. I've never had a ticket be that expensive. I mean, a cheerum was about £90, but I'm used to that kind of price. But when I wasn't even given an option, and the fact that able-bodied people can choose.
And also, like as you said to me on the day while you were trying to get them, by the time you got through, you felt like you weren't given a choice but to buy them. So after all that time, you weren't going to say, no thank you, because you just spent your whole day trying to get them. So you got through after like 4 hours and you weren't going to turn them down based on the price. So you felt like you were had no option really after all of that, which I think everybody would feel too.
Yes, and I it's beyond me, Jess. It's beyond me how they don't put a wheelchair space booking option with on a website. That's beyond me.
So I know that some places, some larger venues and some promoters do offer that option. But I think that it's to do with people taking advantage, because obviously a lot of the time they are cheaper, not in your experience, but a lot of the time disabled seats are cheaper than the usual seats, and you would normally get a carer free or at least half price, but most of the time free, I believe. So I think that they have trouble with people abusing the system, but there's definitely ways around that people should explore. So such as like asking for proof. So once you booked your tickets, you would then send in your proof in the form of a benefit letter or something of that sort. So that's a way to get around that, because it would weed out the people that aren't being genuine in their need for the seat. So I think more venues just need to look into what the problem is, what's stopping them putting it on there, and then trying to solve the problem, because it's not that difficult, really.
No, I totally agree. I mean, with my insurance tickets, I still had to send my PIP letter in to prove that I actually needed a companion ticket. So it is easy. But the issue was for me that it still proves to me that disabled people are seen as less.
Yeah. So I go to a lot of concerts at like theatre venues. I do go to bigger venues as well, but a lot of my concerts I go to at theatre venues, and none of those allow you to book online. And it's nothing to do with, obviously, that I know you've already covered, but it's nothing to do with the artist or even the promoter. In my experience, it's to do with the actual venue, not the promoter, but that may not be the case for Coldplay. But as far as I understood it, it was the venue. So none of the theatre venues that I go to allow for disabled people to book online, which is a bit annoying, because a lot of people with disability prefer to use online because it's easier for them than talking on the phone. I'm quite lucky in the fact that I don't have a problem speaking on the phone, but for a lot of people it's a lot harder. So that highlights the discrimination more, because so I think that they do need to look into online purchasing more for disabled tickets. A lot of the venues, bigger venues, well, middle ground venues, I know they use something called the access card, which is supposed to be like universal. So if you've got one of these cards, you put in your number into participating venues, and that acts as your proof that you would need a free ticket and a wheelchair space. So I'm not sure why that can't extend to place it to venues like you're talking about. I don't know if you've named the venue or if you want to name the venue, John.
Well, it's Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
But I thought it was the venue. So I decided, because I'm going to see Ed Sheeran in Glasgow at Hampden Park, and because I thought it was the venue, I thought, oh, let me try and book tickets in Glasgow, because I didn't realise at the time that it was to do with the artist and promoter. So I went to the same venue in Glasgow where I booked my insurance tickets, thinking, oh, there'll just be a button there, because it's the same venue. And there wasn't, which I find totally disgusting.
So I think that does vary, because I know that the concerts that I go to, that is nothing to do with the promoter or the artist. But obviously, maybe when you get to Wembley, maybe the promoters have more of a say. I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
But like you say, it's not even that relevant whose decision it is. The fact is that a decision needs to be made universally that disabled people can access online services for equality reasons and for, like I've already said, a lot of disabled people, it's a lot easier for them to do that than on the phone. So, yeah.
Bringing Faye and Nicola into it, what's your views on it?
Well, I booked tickets through Ticketmaster a few weeks ago to go and see Ollie Mears next year. And my experience was quite different to yours, John. I found it really easy. But again, I don't know if it's a venue thing, because he's performing locally. Like, it's not a big venue like Wembley. But as soon as I created an account with Ticketmaster, I went to the Ollie Mays tickets and there was a button to click if you wanted accessible tickets.
Yeah.
So I clicked on that and it was pretty straightforward.
So that just proves that it is possible then. So yeah. I booked tickets through Ticketmaster as well. And again, it's varied to both of your experiences. So I pressed the disability button and a little box came up and said, if you need accessible tickets, call this number. So I did and got tickets that way. So it obviously does vary from venue to venue or whatever it varies on. It obviously does vary because we've all had different experiences even within Ticketmaster. So, but obviously, if it gives you a straightforward number and you phone that number, then I don't really mind that because at least you know where you stand. It's when you don't know where you stand and you don't know how to go about getting tickets, that's when it gets difficult, really. And you're being, like you were the other week, John, when you felt like you were getting passed around and you didn't even know if somebody was going to answer the phone at the end of it.
Yes.
You'd already got cut off like twice, at least twice, so you didn't even know if somebody was going to answer your call.
I got to the stage where I nearly gave up, and it was only because I rang back on the off chance that the lines might be free that I actually got tickets. Yeah. Because it wasn't only me ringing the line, it was my PA at the time, she had her phone on and stuff like that. But
it should at least tell you where you are in the queue, because the number you were calling, it was just ringing out, wasn't it? It wasn't even saying where you were in the queue or that somebody was going to answer you. Like, so you didn't even know what was going to happen. So, yeah.
I had a similar problem to that a few weeks ago. I was booking tickets for a different thing, a show by a local dance school that was happening at a local theatre. And you got those tickets through ATG tickets. So I rang the access line, was on hold for an hour and a half, like waiting, didn't tell me where I was in the queue. Then after an hour and a half, I got cut off. The phone just went dead.
Yeah.
So I rang back again. And it was just getting up to an hour and a half and I thought, I'm going to get cut off again. But I didn't. Someone answered this time. So I was on the phone for like 3 hours altogether trying to get to this show. And like Jess said, it didn't tell me where I was in the queue. So after I placed the order, I had an email asking for feedback. So I told them that they need to put an automated message on to let people know where they are.
That's a good idea. I use ATG tickets a lot and I have that experience every time. So it just rings out and rings out and you have no idea how long it's going to be. It could be 3 hours, it could be 15 minutes. So yeah, it would be a lot easier if you were told where you are in the queue.
We've never had an issue like that, have we? Because we've always, when we go to book somewhere, we've always rang up, haven't we? Because we've looked on the website and it's always said, if you need accessible seating to ring the number. And we always haven't, we've never...
Either that or I've given it to Faye and said, well, can we go here and book it for us?
I'll let Faye do it.
When we used to go to the Christmas place, it was always, if you book it, I'll pay you.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
Or if we book to go to theatre, we've never had an issue, have we? We've always always managed to get through all right.
You struggled with your train tickets, didn't you?
Yeah, I did struggle with that because I had to have assistance booked to help me either end. And I wasn't... Was it in Manchester I struggled or was it down here?
More down here.
Yeah, it was more down here that I struggled with because I think, I mean, it was a long time ago now, but I think they nearly forgot that I was on the train at this end.
Oh, yeah, that happens quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. But that's the only ever issue that I found. And luckily, I wasn't on my own doing it. And I think if I was on my own doing it, it would have been a lot worse.
I think something needs to be brought into law that makes it, I mean, obviously equality has moved on, but I think with regards to booking tickets, there needs to be something brought into law that gives parity to disabled people.
It should be covered under the Equality Act, and I'm not quite sure why that doesn't fall under that, really. But I think they probably cover themselves under reasonable adjustments. So in their mind, by them putting on a phone line, that's a reasonable adjustment, but it isn't if that's inaccessible to you.
Sorry, Jeff, go on.
So we can all use the phone, but there are some people that would not be able to use the phone and rely on their computers to do everything for them.
Mm.
So really, that's not a reasonable adjustment, and it's not a reasonable adjustment if it's going to take you five times longer to get the ticket than it would do if you were able-bodied. So, but I think they probably cover themselves under it being a reasonable adjustment.
And I think it goes back to disabled people being in the minority again. Because it's like charging us more for a ticket.
Yeah, that's insane. To be honest, I've never heard of that before, and I think that's the worst part of this story in my mind. I can't believe that you were charged that much when you consider what the normal price is. I mean, that in itself is terrible.
I've never had it before, and that's why because I've never had it before, I thought, oh, that must be the normal price for seated tickets. And then when my friend said to me, he doesn't know me, that's got seated tickets for £50, I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's almost like you're being penalised for being in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that brings me on to another point. Luckily, thank goodness, I only have to have one companion, one carer with me. What if you need two? Because I got told by the extremely snotty woman on the phone, oh, you can only have one companion ticket. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But what if you need it to save you had fits or whatever and you actually need it to one?
If you did need 2-1, they should accept some proof of that. I don't know what they would accept, but maybe a letter from an agency or social services to say that you are 2-1. I don't know if they would have accepted that, but that's what should be in place. The same as any other proof, really. But I think going back to the pricing of the tickets, a venue such as Wembley should be able to put an accessible area in each area of the stadium, if that makes sense. So if the cheaper tickets are higher up and further back, if you chose to sit there, you would be given that choice. There's no good just putting accessible tickets in one place and then expecting you to pay that amount for it.
Yeah.
Right. When a venue's of that size, I don't think they really have that excuse, really. I mean, they should be able to make each area accessible.
I think what annoyed me just about it is I've been to Chicago, I've been to Wembley a couple of times, and the tickets have never been that expensive.
Yeah, I've never heard of it myself. I've been to Wembley, and my tickets weren't that money.
Yes, I know you go and see Jay McDonald quite a lot.
Yeah.
What are your issues? What do you have any issues ever booking tickets to go see her, or is that usually plain sailing?
So, like I said, you can't on none of the venues. Can you book online? I know that to that level, to theatre level, that's definitely a venue issue, not a promoter or artist decision. But for none of them can you book online, so you always need to either call up the venue directly, or Jane uses ATG tickets quite a lot, and they have an access line, like was it Faye was talking about. So either you phone the venue directly, or they have an access line if it's an ATG theatre. To be honest, I don't really have an issue with that. It would be more ideal if I could book online with everyone else, really, because sometimes everyone's got their tickets within 5 minutes of it going on sale, and an hour later I'm still on hold. But the only positive to that is that all the other people needing wheelchair spaces are also in the same boat, so like,
yeah.
I'm not missing out on any available seats, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
could you not get an accessible season pass for Jamie Amanda Tamjunga?
No, there's no season ticket option, but that would be it. That would be ideal. So ATG, you do have like a membership. So I am a member of ATG, and that does mean that I get like essentially early bird access to those venues. As an aside, a bit of a different to tickets, but I would say it's still relevant. The main issue that I have is that the wheelchair spaces are always or mostly towards the back. And I've mentioned this before on our previous videos, but like all my friends, obviously they're towards the front, and we have to separate just before the show starts, and they sit in their seat and I have to go towards the back to mine. And I don't think that's fair, really. I understand the issues that venues have. So like they say that, you know, towards the front, you have to climb down some steps to get to, you know, the front area. But a lot of the time, they just do it because it's easier. So not all venues have that issue. But they just, I think for them, it's easier to put us towards the back, so we're not blocking anyone's view and we're, like, not a fire hazard. But I just don't think it's ideal that the wheelchair spaces are not included, really, in the you know, further forwards.
So again, you're being penalized for being disabled, aren't you, again?
Yeah, and it's hard because some of the venues I go to, the wheelchair spaces are like at the front, but that's probably like maybe 2 out of 30 venues, that kind of number. And it just shows that if those two can do it without any problems, then it should be easier. I understand certain venues, it would literally be physically impossible. And you know, I wouldn't mind that if it was actually not possible. But a lot of the time you just think, well, it is possible because this venue's flat. So why is there not an option to sit a bit further forwards? So yeah, that gets frustrating as well as getting tickets. I think that's my main complaint, really, is just the seating isn't ideal.
I have to say, when I went to the theatre in London a couple of weeks back, they literally just took a seat out. So
yeah.
I was, and I found that quite different, because then,
yeah.
then you're not stuck on the end of a row, or you're not, I think, and I want to bring you all on, in on this really, sometimes as a disabled person, you feel, I don't want to say the word inconvenience, but because of the nature of your equipment, you're always taken into account, almost like you were saying just then, a fire hazard. I don't know whether I put that right, but
you're just in the way. You're just treated like you'd be in the way if you were anywhere different. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they do pass that off as being a fire hazard. Obviously, if we had to leave the venue quickly for whatever reason and we were in the middle of a row, I can see that that's harder to move out, like to move out of the way for everyone to get past. So I can see that. But at the same time, I mean, there's ways around it. There's several exits to a building, isn't there?
Yeah, we could just take seats out closer to the front, but at the end of a row.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would understand if we were on the end. That makes more sense to me than being further back. So it does make more sense to me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've been to venues where I haven't been on the end, so it shows it's possible. But it does make more sense to me if they do put the wheelchair on the end, because I do think that probably that's the safest option. But it doesn't make sense to me to be so far back. Like you were saying, John, I did go to a venue not that long ago. And because of COVID, between the time of me purchasing the ticket and the actual event taking place, they'd actually remodeled the theatre, they'd changed the layout of the seats, basically. So the seat that I purchased and that was on my ticket wasn't actually a wheelchair space when we got there, so it had a seat in it. And like you were saying, they just, it was very simple. They just went and they got a screwdriver. And they just took the seat out. And when you see how easy that is to do, you do start questioning, well, why can't that always be the case? Why can't I purchase a ticket like everybody else? And dependent on where that seat is, why can they not remove that seat? Like, I do know it's not that simple in practice, but in theory, it should be that simple.
Pay, and Richard Nick, I'm going to come to you. What are the steps that society needs to put in place in order for things to change?
I think on every venue through Ticketmaster or on their own, there should be that button which allows you to book a wheelchair seat. And if they haven't got a specific wheelchair space available, then, and it's going to be difficult, but at least a lot more theatres, venues should have the option, like Jess has just said, of removing the actual seat, because then that includes everybody with everybody. Because there's still that stigma between able-bodied and disabled people still to this day. And the world we're in now, even though everybody is the same, when it comes to specific things like this, that's when we definitely still see the divide, and I do not believe it should be there.
And I think it comes back to when you have somebody design a building or a venue, very often that they don't bring in disability consultants who are actually disabled. They just know they have to meet a quota, and then that's it. They don't bring in a wheelchair user, they don't bring in a blind person, they don't bring in somebody with hearing issues, and I think that's where the problem lies.
I think it starts by venues realising they need to make a change to their venues and the way they position the seats. The way they interact with promoters, if it is a promoter's choice. I mean, I've never heard that it was before you said that today, John. But if it is, then they need to liaise with them and say, listen, this is our policy on wheelchair spaces. This is where our spaces are. This is how we like our customers to get their tickets. And it goes to the people in the right positions need to take responsibility for that change. And like you said, I think the biggest change would come if they actually employed disabled people, wheelchair users, people with different impairments onto their boards so that they actually listened. Because if you told most people, like you just said, John, they wouldn't even have thought about the issues that we encounter. So by having disabled people on the board of these places or, you know, at the annual meetings or something, some kind of contact, it would at least put the issues out in the open for everyone to solve, really. Because if you don't know about them, then obviously you can't solve them. And if they think, oh, we're providing a service, it's fine. If they never ask the people that it concerns if that service is working out for them, then they're never going to make the change because they don't realise it's not working. People like Wembley, that, I mean, they're not easy to contact and speak with. Faye was saying earlier that she was asked for feedback, and I think that's very positive. I think if more places ask for feedback, then that would be a way in to actually discuss these issues with the people that could make the change. Because although we can all speak up, we then need the right people to listen and to listen properly. Listen to act, don't just listen to listen. Listen with a view to make a change.
I think that may well be my quote of the day. Listen to make a change.
Listen to act rather than just listen. Yeah.
A lot of people, they think they're listening to disabled people and they think, oh, we've done our job, we've listened to what she said. And then 5 minutes later, they're like, anyway, as you were. So
yeah.
Going back to you then, Faye, what did you get a response from your recommendations or did they just...
No, I don't think I did, actually. I just got the usual thank you for your feedback sort of
response. Yeah, that's the problem.
So
I hope that would have gone somewhere, and I hope they would have read it, and I hope that it's, you know, planting a seed in someone's mind, because that's all you need, really, isn't it? No changes are going to happen overnight, but you just need somebody to
if I do think about it again, and I get that email, and the same thing happens, I'll make sure to put the same comments in again.
Yeah,
I think sometimes the companies almost, like what we've all been saying, they almost pay lip service. Like, it's not genuine. It is genuine. I don't know how to phrase it.
Really. They listen to tick a metaphorical box, don't they?
Yes.
They don't actually listen with a view to taking action on what you've said. I don't believe it. And that's not all the time, because that would be doing people a disservice. But a lot of the time, that's the case.
I know this will probably sound strange to everybody as we're sitting here chatting, but I would love to see a venue. I mean, I don't think it will ever happen, where disabled people are actually put at the forefront of how it's built instead of like an afterthought. And I don't mean like it's just for disabled people, but almost like we're the first people who we thought about rather than just an afterthought. Like being able to sit with everybody else and not being segregated into an area.
I mean, it is possible. Like I said, I've been to some theatre venues that the wheelchair seats have been at the front, and you do feel a lot more included. Like when that happens, I'm with my friends. Like, you do feel a lot more included and you do feel thought about. And the thing is, it's not a case of like redesigning the venue, it's just doing the right thing with the space that you have. I think sometimes people think that it's a massive job to be more inclusive, but actually it isn't. It's just a case of jigging things around slightly, because the smallest change can make the biggest difference for people to be included. It doesn't have to take a massive change, it's just the smallest of changes sometimes, and then suddenly everyone feels included, which is the main thing, isn't it? I'm not that bothered about being the first thought. I just want to be a thought, because a lot of the time I don't think disabled people are a thought, and then it gets to the end of it and they've designed everything, and then afterwards they suddenly think, oh my god, where are we going to put the wheelchairs? Okay, we'll just put them here. So I'm not that worried about being a priority. I just think it's important to at least have been thought of in the process, and some venues show that that's possible. So
I think newer venues should have the ability to, all new venues going forward should have the ability to remove certain seats to make the disabled person feel more included instead of putting us in a box.
Yeah, I agree.
To tick their boxes.
Yeah.
I think all venues should be able to now do that from now on. Just remove a seat. Obviously not if it's down a step. Make it accessible to the point, but certain rows, just remove the seats, and then you're sitting along your friend, alongside your friends, like you've got a big, massive friendship group on your Jane tours, haven't you, Jess?
And yeah.
You'd be able to sit with all of them. Hello to everybody. You've probably met me before, many, many, many years ago.
You left a lasting impression.
Yes.
No, that was around 2012, I think, Rich.
Yes, yes. I remember night before very well.
Yeah.
That moved me on to another subject, really. Just quickly, before we wrap this episode up, it brings me on to the issue of, I don't know if anybody listening to this knows the concept of changing places, toilets. Now, changing places, toilets are toilets that actually have hoists installed in them, and also I don't know what you call it.
Like a changing bed, isn't it?
Yes, I didn't want to call it a changing table, because the listeners might get confused with the baby chair, but it is. Thank you for it. The
disabled facilities changing bed.
Yeah. In case somebody listens into this, quite a few disabled people, myself included, need hoisting to be able to use the toilet if we want to open our mouths. Example, now, if I want to go out somewhere, I always have to make sure that I use the toilet before I leave. And basically, if I get caught short, for want of a better word, while I'm out, I have no way of going to the loo. So I think that changing places, toilets, or something like that, should be a requirement for all public buildings everywhere. And yes, it is changing in more places to have them, like the Eden Project, which is one of the best places that actually stated we have a changing places toilet. Now, for me, for an able-bodied person, the ability to be able to go to the loo is just taken for granted. So I think there should be more changing places toilets, and they should be installed quicker and faster. What is everybody's views on that?
So I've got experience of changing places, and I do just have to say that I do think it's improving at quite a speed. There's more venues that have them now. But I do agree with you, there needs to be even more. I don't know if they could ever be in every public building, only because they're quite expensive to install, and although it would be lovely, I don't know if that would ever be realistic, but I definitely think there should be one in all major towns in the UK, so that you're never more than like maybe a 10 minute drive from one, if you know what I mean, because at least if you know there is one in the vicinity, you can plan your day around that.
Yep.
Because changing places, most of them have a hoist of some description in them, don't they, to make them accessible for all people. And I think that probably in all venues, that's not a realistic idea. But I do agree that there needs to be more, and they need to be up to the standard that every toilet is, because sometimes I go in them and they're absolutely disgusting. It looks like they haven't been cleaned in about 5 years. But I do think that it is improving quite rapidly, but that speed needs to carry on, if you know what I mean. People need to not get complacent, and they do need to realise the importance of these facilities for disabled people. I know that somebody had an experience. I don't know if it was someone here, but I know somebody had an experience. They went all the way somewhere and they got there and the hoist hadn't been charged, so they had to go home again.
Yeah, that's happened to me on
Yeah, I think it was you I was thinking of. So
several.
They need to be maintained well as well, because obviously Faye went there in good faith that there'd be one that she could use when she arrived. And that just shows how important it is that once it wasn't usable, Faye had to return home again. So if they're going to be installed, they need to be able to manage. There's no point in installing one if it can't be maintained.
Yeah, I'm just on the Changing Places website and looking at the facilities. I don't know if you want to edit this in, John, but it describes changing benches and hoists. And it says a height adjustable adult size changing bench to provide comfortable, stable platform for people who use incontinence pads or need help being changed or undressed to use the toilet.
Do you want to go into a little bit what happened to you, babe? Because I didn't realise that you went all the way somewhere only to find out the noise didn't work.
Well, it wasn't that far where I went, to be fair. It was a local town. And I thought, why you normally, if I'm going anywhere, I think, oh, I'll go the loo before I go. But on this day, I thought, oh, I won't bother because there's a changing places toilet in the town, so I'll be okay. So I went to where the toilet was, only to find that the hoist hadn't been charged and the battery was flat. So it meant that I had to sort of hold myself for the rest of the time while I was out and wait till I got home to go to the toilet. And like you said, it's such a small thing that able-bodied people take for granted, but until you're in our situation, you don't realise how important it is.
And also, I think it's felt more keenly for women as well, I think. Because, like, for example, me and Rich can just use a urine bottle. But yeah. Women can't, so I think you feel it more. It's crucial, definitely.
We struggle a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But for me, it's more the sizing of the disabled toilet to begin with, not just about the changing places ones, about the
average ones the they have. In general. Yeah.
They do it to a spec, but like we've discussed, they don't have the disabled person's idea of it. So I found in a lot of places that when I've gone to go in, and I've gone into the toilet, it's just been like a box, and there's not been
and you can't turn around.
And you have to go either, you have to go out backwards, which for me, as we all know, is no good.
A few times in my experience, you can't even close the doors.
No.
That's not a changing places one. That's just an average disabled toilet, but you can't even close the door.
No,
I mean, what kind of facility is that, that you can't put a wheelchair in and shut the door behind you?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you can't use the toilet with the door open. So.
Yeah. And also, very often, the average disabled toilets are used as... In fact, I posted something on my story last night. The average disabled toilet is very often used as a storage facility.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you want to use it, it's like, oh, we'll just have to clear this stuff out before you can actually move it. You can actually use the toilet.
So, yeah, I think in general, if we just wrap this up by saying that if they put disabled people in, if they consult disabled people before they actually design anything that's meant to include disabled people, I think that things will be a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely.
They would realise that, you know, it's not just about getting the wheelchair through the door of the toilet. You actually need to turn it round to the right position and be able to close the door.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take a scientist to work out, but in my experience, most people cannot figure that out for themselves.
So
I think if disabled people just consulted more in the beginning stages of something, then it would be a lot more inclusive.
I'd be happy to be part of a like focus group or something where disabled people are interviewed about their opinions on access to different kinds of venues.
There needs to be more of that.
Definitely. So if anybody's listening and you're in that field of work, give us a call.
Yes.
I think we'd all be happy to do something like this. Well, just to wrap this up then, thank you all for joining in this quite insightful discussion on this bonus episode of The Wheel of Life. Myself and Rich really appreciate it.
We do indeed.
So thank you, Faye, and thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And Nick.
You're welcome.
And Nick. I didn't say this word. So we will. Bridge, do you want to sign off?
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you have been watching Wheel of Life, part of Magaboo Radio.
No. This one ain't.
We're Sting 2.
Okay, let's Sting 2. Rewind. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been watching and listening to a version of Wheel of Life. Goodbye, everybody.
You can find us wherever you download your podcast. We'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye, everybody.